We are quickly approaching the end of 2024. And if you have not purchased an investment property yet this year, and it's been one of your goals, I need you to listen very closely. I know many of you live in areas where it's so expensive and investment properties seem impossible. I'm talking about some of the big cities. So LA, New York City, maybe even Seattle, Atlanta, places in Florida, and the list goes on. If you know that where you live is too expensive, I need you to lock in right now. Investing out of state changed my life as somebody living in California. I now invest in Ohio and I'm growing my portfolio. It's something that's possible. You just need the right information and execution. So if that's you, if you want to learn how to invest out of state, go to outofstatemoney.com and there is a free training that'll outline the steps for you and help you understand exactly what it takes. So go to outofstatemoney.com or simply go to the link in the description of this episode.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast, episode 14. The purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming Black real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors. Shout out to our show sponsors, Mint Inc. Mint stands for the Minority Interdisciplinary Networking Team. Mint empowers young minority professionals with an interdisciplinary network for learning, collaboration, and the development of entrepreneurial ventures. You can become a member of their network for free at mintinc-usa.com. You can also follow them on Instagram at mint_inc. A couple other things before we get into today's episode. We recently cracked the top 200 on Apple Podcasts in the investing category. Thank you all for your support. It would not be possible without all of you tuning in and listening. Definitely don't forget to leave a rating and a comment for us if you haven't already. It'll definitely help us get up in the rankings and reach and impact more people. We're also on Twitter. You can follow us at Bred Podcast, at BRED Podcast. Take a moment, follow us there, engage with us throughout the day and the week. We also now have merch for sale. As I mentioned last week, we've been getting a lot of messages asking for shirts, asking when we'll have some merch. So we do have that, and they can be found at the link in our bio in the show notes. Also, you can just go directly to gum.co/bread. You can purchase our shirts there. We also have an email list. You can sign up for this email list for exclusive content and special discounts and other offers that'll be available. Very excited for this episode. You'll definitely enjoy it. Let's get into it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Very excited about this interview today. Today with me, I have Deandra McDonald, who's based in Charlottesville, Virginia. She retired her job as a public school teacher 5 years after buying her first house. So very excited to talk more about her story. And Deandra, thank you so much for joining me today.
Absolutely. I'm so psyched.
For sure. So first, just tell us a bit more about who you are.
Yeah, so like Sam said earlier, I'm Deandra McDonald. I live in Virginia, originally from Harlem. So, you know, you might hear a little accent, but I'm going to do my best to keep it under control. I bought my first property in 2015. Yes, in 2015. After I graduated, I went to UVA. I majored in chemistry. So by all means, I was like, skyrocketing right to the top, right? I was like, I got my degree. I went to the Ivy of the South. I'm so ready. And then I could not get a job in my field. Like, could not. Granted, I was applying for jobs at UVA hospital, so competing against the best of the best. And I could not get a job. So I was really struggling right outside of school. And everyone knows those first 6 months before that debt hits is like unreal for a little bit. You're like, I get to keep all my money. This is just me. And then Sally Mae writes like, that first payment's due, bruh. So figure it out. And I was really struggling. I had like 5 part-time jobs. I was sleeping in my car in between shifts. I was working as a lifeguard at one point. So I was like showering on shift. Not because I didn't have a place, but just because I could get more sleep if I just went to the parking lot and slept from midnight to 4 and opened the pool than if I tried to go home first. And about a year after I graduated, I just looked around at my life and was like, this can't be it, right? It's been 1 year. And my mom was like, oh, like 50 more and then you can retire. And I was like, bruh, this can't be what my parents did. It just cannot be. And I remember playing this game called Cash Flow when I was younger, who was by Robert Kiyosaki, the author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And the whole point of the game is to get out the rat race, right? How do you buy property and businesses and leverage money to get out so that your W-2 income is not your only source? And as a kid, it's just a game, right? You play it, but you learn and you play it. I remember being like, you have to buy a property. Okay. And I went to the bank in June of 2014 and was like, I'm ready to buy a property. And she laughed. Like, she chuckled. It was a small chuckle. But after she ran my report, she was like, baby, no, you can't afford a property. And I'm like, okay, why? She's like, your credit score is too low. Your debt to income ratio is too high. So you don't make enough money and you have credit card debt. You have nothing saved, right? I was like, okay. So after I picked up my ego off the floor and I left her office, right? With a little tear in my eye, it was, okay, I have to fix something. I wound up getting a job as a lab tech. So that helped my debt, my income, excuse me. I paid off my credit cards because I kept my job as a lifeguard, even though I was working full time as a tech, and all that just went to paying off the credit card, and I saved up some money. And I went back. It was February of 2015. I got qualified for like 90 grand, I think. And I went to my realtor that I found just like offline. I was like, I have 90 grand. I'm trying to buy in Charlottesville. She was like, there is zero properties available for that price, not even like a condo. And I was like, well, I'll be ready when there is, because my lease ends in May and I'm gonna need to not have to re-up a lease. And a property came on the market like the next week. And without even seeing it, I'm like, offer. She's like, no, that's not how this works. I was like, no, offer. She's like, no. You have to go see it. You have to at least step foot in it. And we went to see, and I put an offer in. I was the only person apparently who put an offer in. I got it. I got my closing costs paid. And I closed May 14th, 2015. And I had a roommate by June 1st. And that roommate's rent paid the mortgage. And then it was like, then it was addicted from there. You know, then it was like, yeah. this is great. Oh my goodness.
For sure.
Yeah. For sure.
Awesome. Awesome. We'll definitely dive a bit deeper into that deal. But first, I'd love to hear more about your childhood and what you saw or what you didn't see that shaped your view of building wealth.
Absolutely. So I was a public school teacher, but I never went to public school. I was in Catholic school, a private school all my life. And from K to eight, I was in like a working class private school. And what I mean by that is that everyone's there. Everyone who went there, their parents worked. Like the tuition was like $2,000. So definitely an investment, but it wasn't going to break a household, but they needed to get us out the public school system. And so from there, I learned to see like nurses, right? Pharmacists, police officers, people who worked as parents, people who worked, but, and made good money, but definitely had to go to work every day. Right. And there was probably like six figures, was probably like the highest I could even conceptualize as like income. And that was probably between two parents. Then I went to high school, and I went to a prep high school, like one of the top all-girls, because I also went to all-girls schools. So I went to one of the top all-girls prep schools in the state, let alone the city, and that's when I saw money at a very different level. My tuition went from $2,000 a year to like $40,000 a year, and I didn't pay that tuition. That was pure scholarship. Let's just start. But you had to make a different type of money to be sending a five-year-old to school for $40,000 a year. And there's no like payment plans, right? There's no, I'm gonna put some down later when I get my refund check, I'll pay the rent. This is like just check at the door, plus a donation, plus like, and I will go to houses and just be like, this is different. Like, how can you be in the same, in Manhattan, right? I'm in Harlem, you might be the Upper East Side. How can you be 20 blocks from each other, 40 blocks from each other, and live so different? And that's, and then they could be at everything. That was the other thing that blew my mind. I'm like, so you're gonna have a play at 11 a.m.? Like, no one's gonna come, because back when I was going in middle school, no one came, because they were at work, right? But when we had plays at my high school at 11 a.m., full, packed, moms, dad, and I was like, so you, not only are you making money, you don't even have to be there to make it. You're not taking a day off, right? This is just, you have set up some sort of system to pay you and your presence isn't required. And I was like, oh, I want that. Yeah. Oh yeah, whatever that is. But I went to college and fell back into that old mindset, right? Of like, get a degree, get a job. And I genuinely feel like if I would have gotten a job right out of college, I wouldn't own real estate. Because I wouldn't have personally had that push to figure out something else. And living as a teacher without a kid, right? If I was just going to school, just working, it's not uncomfortable. Yes, we could be paid more, absolutely. But it wouldn't have been an uncomfortable life. So there, I don't know if I would have had that same trigger that said, do something else. Something else has to be better than this. And then once I started investing, then I started seeing like, oh, I'm just getting $600. These other people are getting tens of thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars a month, bruh. But doing the same thing I did, they've scaled, right? So yeah, I think seeing the different types of workers and then seeing clearly how different people had set up their jobs to pay them, whether they were at work or were not, was like a big influence for me to figure out that real estate was what I wanted.
For sure. I think that's it's very interesting, kind of what you saw as you progressed through school, regarding what kind of, the parents of your peers. It's interesting. It seems like it kind of planted a seed in you, and you realize, perhaps, I guess more so as you got older, like, wow, that's something that I want and something that I want to be possible for me. So I think it's really cool that you got to experience those different kind of school settings that expose you to different people.
That's right.
Definitely. So walk us through that first deal. How did you finance it, and how did it work out for you?
Ooh, so I've gotten asked this question a lot, and what's unfortunate is there was no deal in my mind. Right? There was like, it was just, can I afford it? Awesome. Will they say yes? Great. So I can walk you through it as an investor now, like what those numbers should have been or what I should have been looking at. But the only strategy I had when I first started was, will they let me have it? And was it two bedrooms? Because I needed to rent out another bedroom. That's it. But looking, if I try to look back, the goal was to get a two bedroom something under 90 grand. And that was set by the bank because I had like $4,000 in the bank. So under 90 grand with at least two bedrooms. And I had to be able to cover my mortgage with the rent. That was it. That was purely the goal. I did not know about house hacking. I did not know about buying a 4-unit building. I did not know about any of that. All I knew was like, whatever. Was it a condo? Was it a trailer? Was it whatever they gave me under 90 grand, I was going to take, right? And like I said, it had to be two bedrooms, so I wasn't going to share a bedroom. And then it had to be in a space like where whatever I could charge for rent was going to cover the mortgage, so I didn't have to pay for it. That was the, and just to even go back to the money being so tight, right? I said I have 4 grand. I paid my down payment. And my closing costs, whatever I had to pay, I paid. And I remember washing dishes or showering, and the water got cut off in the middle of my shower. And I'm like, what? Confused. So much confusion. And I called my realtor, and she was like, did you get the water turned on? I was like, what? What do you mean? What do you mean the water turned on? It doesn't come with the house. Because I have always lived in apartments where it came with it. And I called the city and was like, I need my water turned on. And they were like, that's going to be a $200 deposit. And I was like, wait, I don't have any money. I spent it all on the house. Like I was like at zero. Like I didn't have anything in savings. Luckily I had a gym membership and still worked at the pool. So for 2 or 3 days I could shower at the pool, but that's how little of a deal it was. If you can understand how like little thinking went into the property. But now, which is really nice, because I bought it so cheap, that mortgage, I'm actually about to refinance, but that mortgage right now I think is 530 maybe, and that property rents for about $1,300 a month. So there's like a really nice spread that came from it, luckily, right? It was like a home run from day one, but that was never the plan when I first started.
Definitely. Was that a condo?
It was a townhouse.
Townhouse, cool. Wow, it's interesting. I think what I like about it is you just did something. You bought something, you know? And I feel like, you know, for a lot of people, if you do something, you learn as you go. You know, you learn as you go. You learn by doing. And it's very interesting just to hear you talk about it. You know, you mentioned you had a very simple criteria, and when it came up, you just wanted it. You know, if it fit it, you just went. And
that's right.
I think it's great that you didn't get stuck in, you know, kind of analysis paralysis, you know. Yeah. When you got there, the water wasn't on, but you figured it out. And a couple days later, you know, so I think it's really cool that you just kind of, you know, you just went for it.
Yep.
Went for it. How many units do you have now?
16.
Wow. So so talk to us about how you get from there to where you are now, and kind of different, different strategies you've used to grow your portfolio.
Absolutely. And again, I would say, please don't follow this step by step, because as I continue going, it just kept being fall into the next thing.
Yeah.
Right. So I had one and I wanted another. And then that's when I learned about you can buy a multifamily, because I hadn't used an FHA loan. And so my
broker, FHA.
So for the Family Housing Association, the FHA, Federal Housing Association, is an opportunity for you to buy a primary residence that is 1 to 4 units big. So I had a conventional loan when I first started. It was my primary residence. It was like 3% down or something, but it could only be a single family. So it wound up being a townhouse. FHA allows you to buy up to a 4-unit building with essentially the same guidelines. So instead of buying a single family, I could buy a fourplex, up to a fourplex. There are no fourplexes for sale where I was, at least not in my budget. So, but I found duplexes. So I went to look at duplexes. There were a lot out there, and much cheaper. This was a few years ago. And I'm like, okay, I want a duplex. And she's like, okay, but you have no money. Again, right? We're back in the same spot where you got to put down 3%. But these duplexes are now like $250,000, $300,000. Like, you're going to need 12 grand-ish to be able to close. I'm like, okay. I have some savings. I haven't ever had to pay rent at this point since I started investing. But that wasn't going to be enough, at least not in the timeline I wanted. So I learned about taking out a home equity line of credit, right? Where you can access some of the equity that's in your property to purchase to something else. So I can write a check essentially using my house as a bank account. So I went to a bank and was like, I want a HELOC. How do I do that? I got approved for like 50 grand. And I was like, what? I just bought this house 2 years ago. And they're like, your market is exploding. And I'm like, bet. So I used that as my down payment for the duplex. My husband, then I was in a townhouse, my now husband, then we got together and bought the townhouse next to my original townhouse. So then we owned like that duplex, then we had another duplex, and it just kept being like write checks from the property we lived in to buy the next thing, use the equity we had gained. And then we started getting into the big buildings because we had the equity to play with, right? And I started developing relationships with sellers. I like to say that with one seller in particular, he's like the great white shark in this area. Right. He owns a lot of properties and I cannot compete with this dude. Like he can do a $10 million closing with a 1 week timeline. Like that's the kind of like life. And I, but I'm like the little shark, the little fish underneath him. Right. Cause he'll call me and be like, hey, I'm trying to get rid of this duplex you want. And I'm like, I guess I can like make it work. I, you know, like, I guess I'll take it. But he knows I'm good for the money. He knows I can take care of the property and I can update it. And it's not worth his time anymore because he buys 40, 50, 60 unit buildings. So when he went to get rid of the dead weight, I'm that little shark, the little fish underneath him, eating away and stuff. But I became that for a lot of people. They like, I want to dump some stuff. Will you take it? And I'm like, yes, because I'm at the point where what I have is time, right? I have time. I have hustle. And I don't have standards because I'm just right now. So I'll figure it out. And that's what it's been. It's been a series of just figuring out almost on the fly what's next. And all the people I work with as clients, my big thing is don't do this. Don't try to figure it out. And that's great because, right, it took me 5 years without a plan. Yeah. Imagine what you could do with a plan. If I would have known to buy a 4-unit first, right? If I would have known from day one not to F up my credit score and that I need a deposit for the water. Like, how many things would have sped up the process if I would have known on day one instead of figuring it out through trial and error?
Definitely, definitely. And can you talk to us more about, like, I guess you can give me an example with like pretend numbers of how like a home equity line of credit would work. It's from like, I guess from like beginning to end. So from taking the money, putting it down, and like if you have to pay it back and things like that.
Absolutely. So let's take a $70,000 property. Mm-hmm. You bought a $70,000 townhouse. You've lived in it for 2 or 3 years. You are ready to buy your next home, but you don't have too much saved. So you could sell your house, but then you lose that townhouse as a potential rental. You want to move out and rent it out. You want passive income as well. You can go to the bank because you still live there and you can say, hey, I would like to take out a home equity line of credit. The bank will then appraise your property and loan you up to probably like 75% of the house's value. So it's been a few years. You bought it at 70. The house is now at $100,000. You owe 60. Right, because you bought it at 70, you've paid off a few years or whatever. You owe 60. The bank will say it's worth 100 grand. We are willing to loan you 75% of the value, so up to $75,000. You already have a loan for 60,000 through your primary purchase, so we'll give you that difference of 15 grand for a home equity line of credit. If you do not write a check from that line, you don't pay anything. You only pay on what you take out. And different HELOCs do it differently. My particular HELOC is interest only for the first 15 years. And then you pay your property. Then you pay the payments. Some do 10 years interest only. Some you pay immediately like it's being amortized over whatever you agreed to. And the beauty of that is the interest only loans, which I recommend, is you have to have an exit strategy, but the money is really cheap right now. So I took out that HELOC, bought another place, you take out the HELOC, write your check to buy whatever, you can either use that money, that income you're getting from your next property to pay off the HELOC, or you can refinance at some point, pay off the HELOC, pay off the original mortgage, and get all the money under one payment again. It really depends on how you use the money. Some people use that HELOC for flips, right? They'll have 50 grand, they need 40 grand for a flip, they'll write the check from the HELOC. When they sell their flip, they'll pay the HELOC off again, and just keep doing that, right? Just having access to that quick money. Some people like me use it for rental properties. Some people use HELOC for other things. They fix up current rentals. They fix up their original house. That's what it was planned for, right? It was to go back into your house. But we're investors and we like to play in the gray of what they were intended for. So yes, that's how you would use a HELOC. You can pay it off immediately, or you can pay it off month by month, whatever works better for your system or your plan.
Wow. Wow, that's really cool. That's really cool. It's almost like a piggy bank.
That's right. That's right.
That's cool. That's cool. Are there any other financing strategies you've used? Has it mostly been just kind of scaling up with the HELOCs?
Yes, partly. I also really, so my favorite method is seller financing. I love, banks have done me great, right? They have given me a lot of money. But it still bothers me that I have to pay you for the opportunity to pay you, right? That I have to pay you underwriting fees and appraisal fees and all these fees to then continuously pay you interest fees. But I respect the hustle, right? Because this is my only option, so this is where I have to go. But with seller financing, I don't have to use a bank. I get to use the seller. If I find someone who owns a property outright, right, they can be my bank. And I love that because we both win. Like, banks got rich off these loans. Like, that's what they get rich off of, is interest. So would you, seller, not want to also be rich like the bank? I understand banks have a lot more time, so I'm not saying let's make this a 30-year loan, but give me 5 years, give me 10 years. You get your interest payments, so you make more money in the long term, but I don't have to pay the bank. And I get access to as many buildings as I want. And the other thing with mortgages is banks will cut you off after a certain point. Like, if you have 10 mortgages, 15 mortgages, they'll be like, you are maxed out. You can't do any more with seller financing. I can get as many as the seller says yes to. And especially when you have bigger players trying to get rid of smaller things, if I can deal with them directly, it allows me to expand my portfolio without restriction versus I have to live in a place for a year for a primary loan. I have to get 20% for a commercial loan. I have to have a 700 credit score for an FHA, right? All these other qualifications I would need if I had a bank involved. So between using the HELOC and seller financing is probably how I got the vast majority of mine.
Definitely. And can you talk to us more about seller financing? And how do you, like, for you, I guess in your experience, did you have to do any convincing, or was it kind of from, you know, you just meeting people who are trying to get rid of some stuff? And
I would say a little both. So I had to show, because all the sellers, for me at least right now, who I've done seller financing with, have sold me properties traditionally. So they had sold me a property traditionally. They are all older and were interested in me because I was so much younger than them. So right there, there's like two guys and a girl, or two men and a woman, right? Who are like in their 60s. And they were like, you're 24. I'm confused. Like, why are you doing this, you know? And so we would have lunch, we would have meetings, and they just became, I think, just fascinated that I was young and like, yeah, I'll do whatever to get what I wanted. And then it became like, well, okay, let's do seller financing because I need to dump 10. I need to dump 3. I need to dump whatever I need to dump. And I don't need to, I can't wait for you to figure this out. So I own the property, pay me monthly. And it's easier for them because they like getting money. They're real estate investors. They get it. Yeah. But they don't have to worry about getting a phone call about the property anymore, or taxes or insurance. They just get a check in the mail or deposited every month. And they much prefer that lifestyle than getting maintenance calls. Like, when I get off this with you, I have like 8 maintenance calls from this week and I have to deal with. Right. And they don't want that life. They want to be note investors where they just get a check and move on with their lifestyles. So it was that, but it was also my realtor is dope. And my realtor, because she gets paid when I buy.
Yeah.
Right. So she's not forcing me to buy, but she came up with the idea herself of like, hey, do you even know this exists? And that was, again, me kind of just falling into stuff. It's like, no, I don't. I can get money from people because now my family and my friends are starting to see what I'm doing and they want to invest, but again, they don't want the mess. Mm-hmm. But I can't use that money in a bank system because it's not seasoned, because I can't explain where it came from, because they won't loan to me if they know I have a investor. And she was like, well, do seller financing. I'm like, what's that? And she explained it. And then she started going out to big fish she knew and saying like, hey, I got this person, she's got some money, but she needs to have the property for a year or two before she can refinance. Like, would you be interested? And that's how a lot of those contacts came as well.
Wow. And how does within seller financing, does that change anything for the realtor, or for them, is it kind of just like a regular transaction?
Just regular transaction.
Oh, cool.
So they get paid the same because you usually have a down payment you have to pay.
Gotcha.
Anyway. And so the seller would then use that down payment to pay off the realtor, pay all the fees they have to pay. So they're not coming out of pocket for this great opportunity for you. Mm-hmm. And then you start writing your checks a month later or whatever you guys agree to.
Gotcha. And are the terms on the seller finance deals, are they all, is there, like, in your experience, is there like a standard term, or is it flexible?
That's the beauty. It's all negotiable. Everything is on the table. I have a whole course about this, uh-huh, about seller financing in particular. Everything is negotiable because there's no bank, which means there's no federal regulations. And I get why there are federal regulations. We had a housing crash in 2008. And even before that, they want banks to become sharks, right? And they don't want all these people to suffer, but they can be restricting for those of us who like know what we're doing. and need a little more room. So with seller financing, it's like, hey, I'll do 0% interest for the first 6 months, then I'll pay you back, then I'll, whatever you want. Like, as long as you guys can agree,
yeah,
you can get whatever you want out of that. And that's why I love seller.
Definitely. I can tell. Talk to us about kind of just scaling up and getting into buildings.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So I had a bunch of smaller multifamily, you know, 2 to 4, maybe had some condos or some townhouses that I've since sold off. And because I realized where the big money is buildings. Right? A duplex or a quad is great. It's better than a single family in the sense that you have more than one person paying your mortgage, right? With my original townhouse, if that person doesn't pay, I don't have the mortgage. But in a building, if you have a 20 unit building and the tenants 1 through 3 don't pay, you still have your mortgage paid, right? Because you have 17 other people paying every month. And so realizing that's what I wanted. I wanted to get into the bigger buildings. And then again, I went in Charlottesville. At that point, the bigger buildings were like $4 billion. And you're like, well, there's nothing I can, I don't have a HELOC big enough for this. I don't have, and they're not going to sell finance me a $4 million building. You know, like I'm not, that's not what they wanted to do. So I had to leave my area. And that was the first time when I started being like, okay, I got to look other places. So I wanted to stay in Virginia, but I had to look in other places, Lynchburg, Danville, Alta Vista, Roanoke, not north because that's more expensive, but I had to look to see what was available. And I found some properties like, okay, well, these are 10 or 20 unit buildings. This can work. I can write from my HELOC because they're cheaper. And they need work, both renovation-wise and property management-wise. A lot of people sell just because they're not good at managing. So they need work, but the potential upside is so big. It's so big. And if I can just figure out that management piece, or if I can figure out that renovation piece, then it's totally worth it to at least give it a try.
Definitely. And talk to us about like work. Like have you, like the properties you've purchased, have most of them been, like have some of them been 10 occupied? Have some of them needed like considerable renovation? Has it been kind of a mix?
No, actually. So I don't like renovations. And I'm actually, let me go back. I didn't like renovations, right? Because money was tight and I didn't know how to do it. And again, this is what I mean about like, if you have a strategy earlier, instead of trying to figure stuff out, because now I love renovations because I took classes, I went and learned from mentors and sat down to figure it out. So a lot of my properties originally were in great shape. They were moving ready. So I might've paid a little bit more for it, but it was what I knew. It was what I felt comfortable with. I then could have a renter in the day after closing, make the money I wanted to make immediately, and move forward. And even now, I don't get very many phone calls because the properties were in great shape to start.
Right.
I'm now buying properties that have to renovate. And I roll my eyes slightly because you can't renovate when a person is in there. So even if I bought a 20-unit building, some of those units are not updated. And conveniently, those are the people who call the most with issues, but I can't renovate until they leave, but I don't want to kick you out. So then it just becomes this like game of like, well, then what do we do? Right? Because your toilet is clearly old. Your appliances need to be updated. I need to paint. I need to change the carpet, but you hear. So what are we going to do about this? So, and I will also say I have not bought a property with renovation that needed structural work, right? That was a result of like massive molding or massive flooding. At this point, even though they might be big, all my work is still cosmetic. I have not felt comfortable yet on my own, and I'm growing, but to do like the foundation needs to be reset, or to do like, it's a complete gut. You need to go to the studs, maybe even further to redo something. Cause I'm not there yet.
Definitely. Well, you know, step by step, you know?
That's right. And again, without a strategy. So you just kind of like figure it out as you go.
Yeah, definitely. It's so interesting. I think, you know, the thing that I'm picking up here is that you just have been learning as you go. You know, you've been learning new strategies, meeting new people, and, you know, just kind of seeing what works for that time and using that. Could you talk to us more about, I know you mentioned you sold off some of some properties you got earlier on. Did you sell those to kind of put those funds towards getting something bigger?
Both. Yeah. The market was hot enough that those properties weren't performing the best. So by selling them, because you could only really get a HELOC if you live in the property as your primary residence. So once I stopped, once my husband and I decided like, hey, it's time to stop moving every year. It'd be nice to like settle and have a house, right? That is ours long term or longer term. It's so what you're gonna thought. Bouncing around.
Or you're saying
why did I sell? I remember I'm back. Why did I sell? We could access the HELOC and there was money tied up in these properties. So we decided to sell, or I decided to sell because I wanted access to that money. And they weren't performing as well. And there was other places where I could invest immediately. Like I knew exactly where that money was going once I got it. It wasn't just I'm selling to sell.
Yeah.
Right. And that's what we decided. And that's why I was like, okay, I'm ready to sell because I have somewhere else to put the money. My bank account is not somewhere I put money. Which is why I really have like a lot of savings. Just because like when I get in, like I can buy property. Why am I just sitting? I'm not like a dragon just sitting on it. I'm trying to keep it from other people. I know because I'm super competitive. Mm-hmm. I know the bank is making money, right? When I have 40 or 50 grand sitting in the bank, I know they're making money and that pisses me off. So I would rather be out there making money than having the bank loan out my money to other people and profit off of it.
Definitely. And do you currently self-manage your units?
I do, yes.
Cool.
I don't do the work. I have a maintenance person who does the work. So like an employee, but I self-manage. But that's why I make sure part of my system at this point is buying properties that I can self-manage without very much effort. So if it is a hot mess, then no, I can't. You know, like if it is in a terrible, terrible shape, then I will probably take on those properties right now just because that's not the lifestyle that I'm trying to lead. Definitely. Because I got into this both for money, but I stuck with it for time. And I don't want to trade one job for another. So if it's going to take me 6 hours a week to do property management, I'm like, okay, that's not really a job. It's more like a hobby I do sometimes, right? But if it's going to be a 40-hour, I'm always picking up, then I need to either hire someone to do it for me or that property is not.
For sure. And what's the reality of self-management been like for you? Because I mean, people kind of have different thoughts from the people I've met and spoken to who do self-manage all or some of their properties. It doesn't seem like it's that big of a hassle if you have systems in place. So can you talk to us more about what it's been like for you? I guess kind of you can even mention what it was like early on and how you've developed and changed systems. To now.
So early on, I was bad. Like, because I also live super close to my tenants, right? I might live next door or I might live upstairs. And so I didn't have the same boundaries. And I also wasn't teaching yet. So I started teaching the year after I bought my first property. And I think as I grew, this is definitely the spot where you see my teacher the most, right? Because as a school teacher, when you have students, you have their boyfriends and their girlfriends because they come to the classroom where they do stupid stuff they shouldn't be doing. You've got administrators, you have parents, you have all these people who want all these things from you all the time. You have to learn to set boundaries or you're going to run yourself ragged, right? These are my office hours. This is when I respond to email. This is what you will get from me outside of the classroom. Like being very clear keeps your sanity. And that's what it has become with tenants, right? It's very clear, like, I will have office hours. Don't get me wrong. I will respond if it's an emergency. But this is not a luxury hotel where at any hour somebody is willing or ready to wait on you. Like, you, to be quite frank, you don't pay enough for that kind of service. Your rent is $400, bro. Or your rent is $1,000. Like, you don't pay enough for that kind of access to my time.
Yeah.
So I think it is a lot easier than people think. I think what the hardest part is not everybody is willing to say no. Not everybody is willing to see a phone call and not answer it, right? People want to help or people want to be liked, and that gets in the way of being a good property manager. Like, I had a tenant call about a clogged toilet, right? And she called it like Saturday at 8. I didn't pick up. I know it was a clogged toilet because I listened to the voicemail. Because I do listen to the voicemail because she called 4 times in a row. So I'm like, clearly something's up. And in my mind, I'm like, you need to get a plunger. And you need to plunge the toilet. Because she hadn't done that, right? She was just like, it's not. And I didn't answer. Because you have a plunger. I make sure you have a plunger to avoid these phone calls. And I called her back the next morning. And she was like, oh, I figured it out. And I was like, oh, yeah. Like in my mind, I'm like, of course you did. Because you have to. Because your toilet wasn't working. Right? And you have a plunger. And it would be different if she was like, it was flooding. Right? If the water was flooding. Because that would be something I do have to deal with now. I need to call my person and get it over there. But it won't flush because... But I know other managers, or I know other people who are starting out who might get up at 2 a.m. and go over there, because I was that person at one point. And then it was my husband who was like, you can't do this. You can't be on call all the time. It's not fair to you, and it's not fair to us, and it's not fair to everything that you are constantly. At any point, everything can stop because someone called you.
Yeah.
Right? So it is not very difficult. What's hardest is, can you set the boundaries? Okay. Can you stick to what you said you were going to do in the time frame you said you were going to do it in order to make sure people don't take advantage or that you don't get burnt out?
Definitely. And to that end, what has been your most challenging tenant experience that you can recall?
Most challenging. So I'll tell you 2 stories. One was not mine, but I think it shows the difference between like maybe culture versus just being rude or just like difference. One of my mentors, one of the people that I have bought properties from, he said he got a phone call that someone brought a goat in the house. Right? Yes! So and he was like, the tenant downstairs called and was like, yo, they just brought a goat upstairs. And he's coming into this like, yo, I said no pets. Like, I don't care if it's a goat. It might be a small bill. Like, he didn't know. He assumed like a little goat or something. And he goes upstairs and he's like, I remember I said no pets. And they were like, we don't have any pets in here. And they said, no. He said, no, the goat. And he's like, oh, that's not the pet. That's dinner. And then he was like, what? And they showed him the bathroom and they had slaughtered the goat. And the goat was draining in the tub. And he was like, they're like, oh, it'll be gone by tonight. And he was like, wait. You know, like, he didn't even know how to respond to it. Because it wasn't a pet. Right? But you can't. And then he also didn't have a reason to say, like, no.
Yeah.
Right? Because it was clean. They were draining it over a they had their drain already. They had their snake ready in case the fur clogged. That it was crazy. And he talks about that with such disdain because he was so mad. And I think it's so funny because that is like a cultural line, right? Yeah. That is a difference. And so now he has to put in his lease, like, you may not slaughter animals, like, in the units.
Yeah.
So that's more like a, they didn't know. And they genuinely, I genuinely feel like they didn't see anything wrong with what they were doing. They were like, oh, this is, it's cheaper just to buy the goat. And of course I'm going to walk up, why am I going to carry a dead goat upstairs? They're going to walk up and kill it upstairs. Like, duh, I got the shower rod. That's where we hang the corpse. Like, what are you talking about? So that's not a funny aspect. My other one is, might also be slightly cultural, but this was with me. I bought some studio units. And they were, are like 350 square feet. So not very big. Perfect for one person and a tiny, tiny dog. Maybe a couple who is like, yo, we are living cheap right now just to get ourselves together. But of course the building came occupied. So I had to go to each unit and meet the people, see what they had, see what was available. 2 tenants in particular who no longer live there. One, there were 3 people who were adults. right? So grown people over 150 pounds, over 200 pounds. So these are not like stick thin people. And I bring that up because it was 340 square feet. There is not a lot of space in these units. And they had two dogs. And I couldn't kick them out because they were on a lease. Right? So that previous owner had signed these tenants. And that's what I mean about, like, sometimes you're like, it would have been easier if it was empty, right? And like, I know I'm going to get a check, maybe. Maybe. And I have to tell them, like, yo, no one else can live here.
Yeah.
You are, I don't even know how you're surviving in this space. And they were like, oh, man, I'm glad you said that because we were going to get another dog. And I'm like, it's 300 square feet. Like, you, and these are not tiny dogs. These are pits. Yeah. These are big dogs. And there was another couple of, well, it was two couples. It was a couple, so two people. And two, like, 100-pound pit bulls. And you're just like, and I have pit bulls. I'm pit bull friendly. Love pit bulls. But the space. Like, how do you, and you, of course, they don't want to walk their dogs, right? Yeah. They want to let the dogs run free, but not everyone likes pit bulls. And these are not trained animals. And it was just a mess to try to get them to be like, yo, what can we do to get you to leave? Because this is not going to work. It's not big enough. And they were also the loud ones. They had stuff wrong. And when one abandoned the unit, and when I walked in and there was poop just everywhere. And you're like, he left yesterday. This didn't come last night. Which meant you were living like this. You know, like you were living in this space. There's poop in the mattress, there's poop. And it was just outrageous. So that would probably be my worst of just when you have old tenants who have bad habits, especially if the other landlord, not only did they allow it, they wrote it in the lease allowing it. That's when things can be rough because you have to legally abide. I can't kick you out and I can't require you to get rid of your dogs. And I can't require you to walk your dogs because in the lease, it says you can let them out and they can run. So you have to like wait out that 1 year period and hopefully it's maximum 1 year you have to wait. But those are my worst.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Definitely. On a more positive note. So, you know, you were able to leave your job as a school teacher in pretty quick. I mean, within 5 years, what made you feel comfortable enough to make that move? And just kind of work on being an investor full time?
I think, I want to be completely honest. I think one of the big things was that I am a science teacher. I'm a Black female science teacher at the secondary level. And I say that to say, I knew if I needed to get a job, I can get one, even now. Like if I needed to go back full time, I could be like, hey, will someone hire me full time? And there would be offers because I was good at what I did and I am a hot commodity. So it felt easier to leave because I knew if I had to go back, I could. But I think a big part of it was I had to just say, I'm going to do it. The money makes sense, right? I have enough coming in. I have my Airbnbs making money. I have my long-term rentals making money. I have short-term rentals. I have flips going. There's money. So if I stay, don't lie to yourself, because I'm very big about that for me. Don't lie to yourself and say you're staying for the money.
Yeah.
Because you're making more outside of this. You're staying because you're scared. You're staying because no one you know personally has done this. Your parents haven't done this. Your friends haven't done this. No one you know has said, I built a business and I'm no longer going to have a job. I'm not going to call it my side business. I'm going to call it my business. This is what I do. And I got to a point where I had to do that. I had to say, no, this is what I do. And I won't work full time. I still teach a class, like, because my babies, I started when they were freshmen.
Yeah.
And I just want to see them graduate.
Yeah.
Right? But I'm there so infrequently. And even when I'm there, I'm like, why am I here? This is too much. So they graduate this year, and I definitely will not be doing any, not even like a class next year. Maybe I'll volunteer sometimes. Like, I'm on that level now. I can volunteer.
Yeah.
Like when those rich people in the middle of the day just
like the ones you saw in the ones you saw back in New York.
Yes, that's exactly right. I can finally say I'm on that level. Yeah. I can't write a $40,000 tuition check yet. Right? I'm not. quite there. But I have the time, I have the freedom, and that's what I really wanted to begin with. But yeah.
Definitely. Wow, that's just so inspiring. You know, it's interesting. You know, we kind of go back to the beginning of the interview, and you're just speaking about all the people you saw and the fact that they had all this time, you know, more importantly, time. And here you are, you know, a short time later, and now you have that time. You know,
as you make me emotional. I didn't even make that connection until just now, and I'm like, my mind made it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a powerful thing. Now you can be, you know, going to the plays, going to the performances, volunteering, and it's because you want to. Not, you know, like you're not.
You know, like, it works.
Yeah, it works. for sure. So where do you go from here? What are your goals as far as like growing your portfolio and continuing to move forward?
That's right. It's a great question. I'm actually in the middle of writing my 2020 goals.
Nice.
As I'm reflecting. And what's new is that I have this new like digital business. This new thing I've started, right? Where I am more systematically offering courses, more systematically offering one-on-one coaching, so people don't have to wait the 5 years like I did or lose all the money I did making like foolish mistakes. So I'm writing goals for that because I think that's really important. So similar to what you're doing with the Black Real Estate Dialogue, trying to teach more young people, more Black people, more wannabe entrepreneurs, wannabe investors, what the next step is, and holding their hand so they do it, so they don't get trapped by analysis paralysis. So that's one. In terms of my rental portfolio, I don't have those numbers yet.
Yeah.
I'll be under contracts for, there's like 24 units I'm looking at right now. There's another four. There's lots of units and lots of places.
Yeah.
That I've toured in the last few weeks, and I have to figure out essentially which one is going to get the offer next. Mm-hmm. So I'm at 15, 16 doors now. I think by the end of the year, next year, probably be close to 40 or 45. Like, wow. If I can triple next year, that'll be good. I think that'll be a realistic goal. But yes, I don't have the exact number.
That's awesome. Oh, that's awesome. you told us right there. You said 40, 45. That's incredible. We got to do like an update or something.
That's right. That's right. Next year, December 2020. What have you done since
we talked? Hopefully I'll have added a couple more too.
That's right. Not hopefully, you better, sir.
No, you're right.
You're talking to investors, great investors. Well, I won't say great. You're talking to investors on a weekly basis. That Y building for you must be outrageous.
Yeah, I'm just like, it's crazy. Like every week, I'm just like, all right, I need to figure out how we can expedite this thing. Like, it's just, the ideas, just based off what I'm learning, has just been amazing.
Just learning. So what's your goal for 2020?
Huh? My goal.
What's your goal for 2020?
I want to add 4 doors. I'm not sure. I mean, I can see how I can add the next one, and we just gonna have to figure out the other 3. It can be done. We just, you know, I'm just, you know, I just need to figure it out. But that's my goal. I'm trying to add as many as I can next year.
Awesome. All still in the same place? Are you looking to branch out?
Yeah, I like Dayton, Ohio right now. It's a pretty good market. Job, like the unemployment is pretty low. The prices are affordable. They're revitalizing and redeveloping all different parts of the city. So I think it's pretty good. I'm open, but I kind of want to see what I can do there and eventually kind of branch out and see where it goes from there.
Awesome.
Yeah. One of the things we spoke about a bit off camera is your approach to teaching others real estate. So you use comedy to kind of speak about different things, on Instagram. And so first, you know, we'll go through a couple of posts and just kind of see what you were thinking. First, like what inspired you to kind of use comedy to teach others?
Give me 2 minutes. Okay, I'm so sorry. What inspired me to teach others? Because I was a teacher.
Yeah.
And I wanted to hold on to that for a little longer. Right? And I learned in the classroom very early that I didn't have, as a kid growing up, I had a lot of older teachers, and so they were able to have that grandma aspect to them, right? But I didn't have that same feeling with the kids because I was closer to their age. So what I learned, what kept them most interested was like stories, was like acting, was getting in their faces in a different way than they were used to being, right? Creating characters and scenarios. So that's what I tried to bring to Instagram, right? Of like, I want to teach you, but I almost going to have to like slip in the vegetables with the spaghetti. Like you don't even realize you're eating it.
Yeah.
And that people like that. They watch the video, at least I think, this is my hope, right? They're watching the video and they get a laugh, but there's something that sticks later. Or they're like, oh, but why would, that does sound ridiculous that somebody would say that. Or that is something I should work on. That does sound like something I should do. Definitely. So, yeah.
So we'll look at, I'll pull up two posts real quick and then we'll close out with just you talking more about like your courses that you offer and where people can find you. So the first one is them. I haven't been in my rental property in over 10 years. Getting that mailbox money. So can you talk more about like the thought behind that and you know, why that's probably not the best thing to do?
That's right. I think people love the idea of passive income and kind of build it up into their minds that they never have to engage with their properties. And I get it. I get that you like don't want to go all the time, but someone needs to be though. Right? Because what happens is you wind up having problems like the one I had, right? Where I go and there's three people and two dogs and there's poop everywhere because no one came and they knew no one was coming. So they could do whatever they wanted at any point in time because no one was checking on the property. So the fact that people boast, like I haven't been somewhere and no one has seen it, like I just couldn't imagine that's your baby, that no one has seen your baby in all these years. And you're like proud of that is crazy to me.
Definitely. Agreed. And then the last one I'll share is I am debt-free because I'm responsible. If you can't buy it in cash, you can't afford it.
That's right. And you know, there's some truth to that because as America, sometimes we get into debt unnecessarily. So there are people who really struggle with debt. And I think it is probably a better thing that they are debt-free, but I have a lot of debt. Right? Or my businesses have a lot, my LLCs have a lot of debt, but my net worth has never been higher than what it is right now because there's a plan for my debt. I don't pay my debt. My buildings pay my debt. My properties pay my debt. I don't pay it, so I don't worry about it. Not only do I not pay it, I make a profit off of it because if I have to wait to buy everything in cash, like I would be stuck. So being debt-free is not the goal. It's being like cash flow positive. That's the goal.
Yeah, tell us more about your courses and your coaching and all those things that you're offering right now.
Absolutely. So if you go to my website, which is deandramcdonald.com, D-E-A-N-D-R-A, McDonald.com, you will see everything I'm offering. I have courses about how to start an Airbnb, how to finance your next rental. Those are all at your own will courses, right? You move at your own pace. And then I have my signature live online class. The next one actually is starting in 2 weeks. Called 5 Steps to Owning Your First Rental Property, right? Where I break down the 5 steps that I used when I go back and like rethink it to buy my first property. Because for a lot of people, it's just the confusion that keeps them from taking the next step. Or it's the uncertainty if they're making the right decision.
Definitely.
Right? That's the big problem. So that, and then I do one-on-one coaching for people who say, no, I need someone who's going to focus specifically on me and not anyone else as they develop their next strategy. So those are the 3 things I'm offering right now.
Awesome. And where can people find you if they just like to check out your post or talk to you more?
Absolutely. I am Deandra McDonald on all things social. So Instagram, Facebook, my website. I'm considering getting a TikTok. I don't really understand it, but but on all things social is the same thing, Deandra, D-E-A-N-D-R-A McDonald. You'll be able to find and laugh along with me. Don't forget to like, comment, because sometimes I feel like I'm making videos like in this vacuum. And I'm like, are people watching this? And then Sim will be like, I've seen them all. I'm like, but you've never commented. I didn't know.
Yeah, absolutely. And what is, my last question, what is one thing you would say to someone who, you know, is interested in real estate, wants to start out, but they're just kind of, they're just very fearful of the unknown, or, you know, if it'll work out or not. What would be your advice to somebody like that?
I would say there is no perfect property. I think a lot of times people get scared because they're looking for the perfect option. The like, if I don't get this one decision right, then everything else is useless. Where I can full on say that there, because there's so many properties to buy, there is no perfect next one. There is just the next one, right? Or better yet, there's just a next one. So don't get caught up trying to make the perfect decision. You need to make a decision, a choice, and just get started.
Definitely. Awesome. Well, this was a really great interview. It's amazing. Like, things came full circle for you, you know, growing up, you know, growing up in the city, you know, how that is. But you had a very, very unique experience in private school, especially, seems like, especially as we got to high school, just seeing people with money, but also time.
That's
and,
right.
You know, now, you know, a couple years later, probably feels like, you know, you're in that position now to have time, to have your time back, you know, of course, you know, financially as well, to be able to take care of what you need to take care of. But, you know, you have the time, you know, you have the time to do different things. So I think it's just very inspirational. And I know our listeners will learn a whole lot from this interview. And, you know, for those listening, definitely follow her on Instagram, look into her posts, you know, they're funny and educational. And she also has a lot of great resources that can help you to do the same thing. So DeAndra, I really, really do appreciate you coming on with us today.
Absolutely.
For sure. And to all our listeners, thank you again for listening. You can follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue. Look forward to connecting with you all soon.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.